Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in. Welcome to the program. My name's JD. We are, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast, and we are live right now. Today is the 11th day of February. It is Wednesday. We are at the crux of the week. All we have to do is make it through the show, ladies and gentlemen, and then we will be past the halfway point, at least where I'm sitting here in Missouri. So, we're live right now. You can always tell because it's a weekday and it's bright outside, at least here in the United States. So as such, if it is bright outside and it is a weekday, or if it's a weekday and you think, you know, we're probably live, you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com and you can get into the chat room. Absolutely amazing stuff going on in the chat room every day. Absolutely just pivotal to what we're doing here, ladies and gentlemen, is having you guys in there. We create a forum here so that you guys can talk about some of the articles that we're talking about. And also, if you guys want to have questions or have questions for the guests, if you guys want to, you know, dish out some comments, I can always get the comments from the chat room, take them over to the guest, and we can have a big discussion that way. Because, again, I'm not that smart, ladies and gentlemen. That's not my role here. My role here is just the guy that happens to own the microphone. So what we do is with the guys behind the scenes, we bring you the best guests that we can possibly bring you and the best information. Usually in the first hour, we spend kind of going over the news, everything that's going on around the world and in your neck of the woods, try and kind of dig our way through the agenda. It's always important to figure out not only what it is that the alternative media is picking up on right now, but what the mainstream media is trying to tell us, because it's in those telling details that we can always figure out kind of what the agenda is. And it's always nice to be able to think about some of the things they've told us in the past and put it all into one picture for us. So anyway, that's kind of the goal here at Red Pill. Try and break through some of the layers of the onion of this whole matrix that we're in right now. And we're going to have Doreen Hannes on the show today. Very, very excited. Truthfarmer.com is her website. You can go check her out. But she has been an avid student of the World Trade Organization. And also on a personal front, she is kind of she's a person who really is into self-sufficiency, you know, growing your own food, taking care of your own property, being at one with your family and your community. And so some of the things that she has seen as a threat to that with NAFTA and with the WTO, she's just right there at the front of keeping us informed about what's going on, not only in like a personal agricultural self-sufficiency kind of arena, but in some of the other larger scopes too. She can really help us look at some of the divide and conquer techniques that are being used on all of us right now, and some of the mainstream issues that we're talking about. The police brutality is one of them. The anti-vax versus vax, you know, polarization that's going on right now in the country. There's so much polarization happening right now, and we're going to talk about things like that and maybe try and figure out what we can do about some of those things. So anyway, that's what's going on at the 11 o'clock hour, about 1 hour from now. Ms. Doreen Hannes will be joining us. Tomorrow, Dr. Brooks Agnew is going to be on the show. He is a CEO of a little company that makes electric cars, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to be learning all about that tomorrow. And then Friday's show, I got to tell you, Friday's show, we'd like to do, I don't want to say coast-to-coast type stuff on Fridays, but stuff that's a little bit more out there, not just your standard, this is what's going on in the economy and this is what's going on in geopolitics, things like that. So Friday's show, we're going to have a couple of authors on. Their names are You Serious and Jay Cornell. They've written a book on transhumanism and about the pending transcendence that is probably going to be going on as technology seems to be just running away from all of us and we're losing control over, essentially what all that means. So, but they've written this really fascinating book, I have to tell you. about some of the changes that might be coming down the pike in terms of, you know, us merging with computers and merging with technology. And, but what I like about the book is that it's not all doom and gloom. It does actually say, you know, this is something that we're not going to be able to fight, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately. I don't think that there's going to be a way to get around this. They're going to market all of these things to us as a convenience. And before you know it, everybody that you know is going to have some chip implanted in their eyeball so they can get their emails more efficiently because it's more convenient. And then that's just how it's going to go. They're going to roll all this stuff out. Think about the technology that we're being, you know, molested and abused by now. All of this stuff that we're using right now was sold to us on the premise that all this technology would enable us to work 10-hour work weeks and things like that. So, you know, a lot of the fear that we've got revolving around this transcendence, revolving around the idea of merging with computers, is that we know that the powers that be are going to try and use that to their advantage, to use it, you know, essentially exactly like the Matrix laid out, turning us all into a battery. But that isn't necessarily to say that the technology itself is really bad. You know, technology is one of those things that's kind of like the gun on the table. It can be used for good. It can be used for bad. And these two guys have picked out a lot of things that could potentially be really good in terms of what's going on in technology right now. So anyway, be an interesting conversation for sure on Friday. I hope you guys all do stick around, tune in for that as well. We're almost through another week, you guys. I can't believe we're almost halfway through February right now. It's blowing my mind how quickly these years seem to go the older that you get. Anyway, okay, let's jump into some international news right now. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and yesterday was no exception. So let me check the chat room here real quick. Everybody talking amongst themselves. Good to see. Good to see. And got to check the old Skype connection here, make sure I'm not doing something wrong. Somebody's saying something. I don't know what they're talking about. Okay, moving on to international news right now. Oh, if you guys want to also, and I highly encourage you to do so, go to redpillreports.com. Every day there's a show section right there at the top of the page. You can find out everything you want to know about the guest. Follow some links to their pages. Today, again, Doreen Hannes is going to be on the show. Truthfarmer.com is her website. But that's also a great place to go and look for all your daily news. We try and go through as many of the articles as we can, just kind of keeping you guys up to date. But I do what I'm doing right now pretty often, which is ramble, and that cuts into the time, so I don't always get to stuff. So sometimes it's every day you should go to redpillreports.com, check out the show section before the show. That'll get you geared up. If you have any you know, questions that you can then formulate for the guest, you can throw them into the chat room up front, and I'll write them down and make sure we get stuff like that asked. Anyway, loving you guys in the chat room. Hank, thanks for all you guys being there, and thanks for you guys who are supporting redpillreports.com and sharing the show and the site with your friends and family. Can't not thank you guys enough. Okay, tirade over. Moving on to the news here. No joy in Yemen, apparently, is what's going on. And by no joy, I mean we are throwing in the towel in terms of U.S.-supported hegemony there. So the United States officially is closing its embassy in Yemen amid the political deadlock and deteriorating security conditions that the takeover of the country by Shiite rebels a couple of weeks ago. And this is according to a couple of U.S. officials. They don't want to be named because, you know, that might put their job on the line. But this does come from the AP, so it probably is fairly accurate. The officials said diplomats right now being evacuated from the country, and the embassy will suspend operations pending until conditions improve. So pending the improvement of conditions there, the embassy in Yemen has been closed until further notice. Yemen has obviously been in a crisis for months, and the Iran Shiite-linked Houthi rebels besieging the capital and then taking control. And the U.S. officials spoke on condition of anonymity because, again, they're not authorized to discuss the closure publicly on the record. And they also went on to say, though, that Marines providing security at the embassy would also likely take leave, but American forces conducting counterterrorism missions in the region or other parts of the country will not be affected. But it does look like our reign of terror in Yemen has officially come to an end, or is at least being suspended until we can get the people there back under control, apparently. Because, you know, again, we're seeing a lot of this uprising all around the world. We've been messing with all these people and all these sovereign nations for decades now, and people are just sick of it. I don't know what else to say about it other than people are just sick of it. And it's not just us, it's NATO, it's the Troika, the Bretton Woods institutions. Everybody and overall globally is just kind of fed up at this point. And I, you know, I can't support that I can't support that MO enough. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Ukraine. Obviously, we've talked a little bit about the difficulty that the western side of the country there in Kiev is having in terms of getting support, getting troops to show up and go fight their brothers over on the eastern side of the country. Remember, they actually initiated a draft. They're trying to get like 100,000 people to sign up, and so far not having a lot of trouble. But a little video came out that Zero Hedge carried yesterday, and I loved it because it exactly exemplifies what we're talking about right now and the problem that Ukraine is posing to the world right now. So here's an example. When the Ukrainian army officers came to the Ukrainian village of Alekaya Nyamenkya to tell men to prepare to be drafted, they were not prepared for what happened next, okay? As the commanding officer was speaking, a woman actually grabbed the microphone out of his hand and proceeded to tell him off. She said, "We are sick of this war. Our husbands and sons are not going anywhere." And then she launched into a passionate speech denouncing the war and the coup leaders in Kiev to the cheers of the crowd. Remember, this is happening on the western side of the country. This is not on the eastern side where we would expect things like this. This is exactly what we suggested was going to happen when they tried to get people to go fight their own brothers and sisters for money. It's not plausible, especially when your money has lost 50% of its value in the last, I don't know, month. Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But what's important to recognize here as well is that what she actually did there in the Ukraine is now a crime, right? The only reason she wasn't arrested on the spot is because the villagers there would not have tolerated it. But in Ukraine, Transcarpathia, which is a well-known journalist for Ukrainian 112, which is his name is Ruslan Kotsaba. He's been arrested, and he's been charged with treason and espionage for making a video in which he declared, "I would rather sit in a jail for 3 to 5 years than go to the east and kill my Ukrainian brothers. This is fear-mongering, and it must be stopped." So Kotsaba may actually sit in jail for 23 years. That's the prescribed term for the charges, again, treason and espionage filed against him for merely making a video and putting it on YouTube saying he would rather go to jail than go fight his brothers and sisters. That makes total sense to me. And now he's looking at possibly 23 years in prison. And Kotsaba's arrest is part of this desperate effort by the Ukrainian government to intimidate the growing anti-war and anti-draft movement there, which threatens to upend Kiev's dreams of conquering the rebellious eastern provinces. And Kotsaba's particular crime, according to prosecutors, was in describing the conflict as a civil war rather than a Russian invasion. That was it. He was on that video. He said, "This is a civil war. This is not an invasion." And that, according to prosecutors, is the most grievous thing that he did during this video, right? This is a point that the authorities obviously cannot tolerate. And the same meme is being relentlessly broadcast by the Western media that an indigenous rebellion with substantial support is really a Russian plot to subvert Ukraine and reestablish the Warsaw Pact, which now has the force of law in Ukraine. And anybody who contradicts this is subject to arrest. That's what's going on the western side of the country. And just to put a finer point on it here, the draft resistance at the east in the western side of Ukraine right now, draft resistance is at an all-time high, with a mere 6% of those called up to have reported voluntarily. So 94% of the people that they're trying to draft in the Ukraine, they've got to go door to door and drag them out of their house. That's what's going on in the Ukraine right now. So again, eastern side Kiev, or the western side Kiev, not nearly as successful as they would like us to believe that they are. And here's what McCain says about all this too. John, for the love of God, McCain was telling reporters yesterday also that if we had only provided them with weapons, they wouldn't have had to use cluster bombs. Think about the logic here. So he's referring to the fact that the Kiev western side, you know, NATO-supported militia, for lack of a better word, is being forced to use more than aggressive as necessary cluster bombs on the western, on the eastern separatists. Man, I can't believe I can't get the east-west thing right today, guys. Sorry. And if we'd only provided them with better weapons, they wouldn't have been forced into this position where they have to use cluster bombs on people in the eastern side of the country who just want to be left alone. He's insane, ladies and gentlemen. The guy is insane. John McCain should not be allowed to speak in public ever. He's not qualified to work at a Dairy Queen, in my opinion. And this is the kind of junk that he's saying. Anyway, that's what's going on in the Ukraine right now. And, there's some other stuff happening too. Russia Today had a pretty, a pretty interesting report. We're talking about the kind of the fracturing of the support between the EU and the United States, and it does look like that is intensifying quite a bit. So there was a gentleman, Neboja Malik. He is a political expert from the Ukraine, and he was talking to RT yesterday, and somebody had posed a question to him about the meeting between Merkel and Obama, asking him whether or not it was fruitful. And I thought his response was pretty important to understand. He goes on to say that just a message that the U.S. is considering sending weapons is going to encourage the regime in Kiev not to engage in any sort of diplomacy and to continue to pursue military means to resolve the crisis. So the fact that even though Obama sort of conceded to Merkel and saying, yeah, there's really not any kind of military solution on the table, but he also said that they were still considering providing weapons. You've got John, for the love of God, McCain in the background cheerleading for more weapons in the Ukraine. So just that potential, he says, this gentleman, Mr. Malik, who's the political analyst there from the Ukraine, saying just the fact that we're leaving that on the table is enough of a motive for Kiev to look away from diplomacy and to continue to pursue this military means. And I completely agree with him. That's that we're not taking a strong enough position on trying to fix the problem. And that seems to be the motive for everything that we do in the United States. Is we like to polarize the issue. We like to point fingers, but we don't actually want to take a macro step back and look at the actual problem and see if we can fix it. Because really what the problem is right now is that there is a group of people pursuing profit based on the lies of scarcity and competition, and they are dropping bombs on people. That is the problem. It has nothing to do with one group wanting to be left alone, you know, one group wanting more money or anything. I mean, that is what it comes down to, but it's much more simple than the media would have us believe, in my opinion. Anyway, the fact that there is dissent from Europe is pretty meaningful and significant right now. And if it is, in fact, real dissent and not just posturing by Merkel, that he believes this political analysis guy here, he believes that Europeans are starting to feel the impact of these sanctions, because this war of words and deeds in which Washington is targeting Moscow via Kiev is actually destroying the European economy more than anything else. And so Europeans right now are trying desperately to get away from this crisis. They're, you know, Merkel and Holland both at this point. You know, I was having a discussion with a friend of mine the other day who was talking about whether or not the United States and the EU were really similar entities, and whether or not I thought it would be better if the United States was next to the EU. And I think, you know, it would be better, because we would be more accountable for the consequences of our actions. I think the fact that that we're part of the EU and we're part of NATO, it gives us this ability to use a very long stick and poke these governments very far away. So from a business standpoint, it's fantastic that we're so far away. But that's, again, why Holland and Merkel are saying we need to rethink this, because if this gets really bad, if we lose Greece, we will not be able to continue to use sanctions against Russia. Greece is going to obviously become a powerhouse if they get weapons from Russia and they get money from Russia. So we probably really need to think this whole World War III on our doorstep motive that seems to be playing out in the world. So I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing, again, Europeans starting to really say, man, this has not been a swift ordeal as the United States would have had us believe. And I think that well, that's pretty much where we're at right now with that. I have to say too that I find it very interesting that amidst all of these quote unquote fracturing relations between the EU and the United States, you know, the subject of MH17 has not come up at all. Why is that? Why would Obama, if we had information that Russia killed, you know, 269 people or however many people were on that airplane, and we had that information, this would be a slam dunk contest winner. We'd be done. You know, there'd be absolutely no way that anybody in Europe, would be able to stand up and say, we don't care that they blew an airliner out of the sky. And so we're going to obviously bolster our defenses around it, because obviously these people can't be trusted. That situation hasn't come up. Nobody's talking about that. And I find that to be very, very interesting. It makes me believe, that they would rather us not think about MH17 ever again for the rest of our lives. And that's probably why the delay behind the black boxes keeps occurring. And again, I think Russia really holds an ace in the hole with that one, but I guess it remains to be seen. But again, just find it interesting that nobody's bringing that up while Obama's sitting there talking to Merkel and isn't saying, hey, by the way, do you remember when they shot that airplane out of the sky? Maybe we should focus on that. Probably because it didn't happen like that. Got some news coming out of Sweden right now I think people might actually enjoy here. The very first ever Palestinian embassy in Western Europe is now open in Sweden. It opened Tuesday night, last night. The Swedish prime minister gave the press service that information. So President Mohammed Abbas has arrived in Stockholm for the event. The prime minister, Löfven, has vowed to aid Palestine, but he's also calling on reforms right now. But under the newly signed deal, Sweden's financial help to Palestine will grow by about 1.5 billion kronas, which is not very much. It's only about $180 million over the next 5 years. And the Palestine has diplomatic missions in countries that either recognize or partially recognize it as an independent state. But until Tuesday, Palestine had only had a general delegation of Palestine in Sweden based in Stockholm. And on October 30th, Sweden was the very first Western EU member and the 135th of the world's 193 nations to officially recognize Palestinian statehood. Britain, Spain, France, and Portugal followed suit. And following the move, as expected, relations between Sweden and Israel went south, and they deteriorated even further as of yesterday. Now, the foreign minister of Israel has now called off a visit to Sweden in January, and the at the same time, Israel media cited Lieberman as saying he didn't want to meet Wallström, and now she isn't welcome on an official visit to Tel Aviv. So now the ambassador to Israel from Sweden, not welcome in Tel Aviv, because they're recognizing the fact that Palestinian people are people as well, and they probably don't deserve to have bombs dropped on them. I'm not encouraging them to be shooting rockets at Israel, but I am very much in the position that the occupation there needs to go away. And if you guys haven't seen Anna Balzer's presentation of the occupation in Palestine, you are doing yourselves a disservice, because you are not getting both sides of the coin. And there's a lot more going on with the occupation there than anybody really wants to address. And I really commend Anna Balzer, who is also Jewish, very strongly for going there and having the courage to take pictures and talk to locals and find the real story and actually bring it back to the world. So they can see what's going on there right now. I just want the occupation to end. I don't think that, I don't think anybody, you know, I don't think there's a good reason to, remove people from their land just because they say that they're, the chosen people. That doesn't make sense to me. Everybody should have the right to humanity. Everybody should have the right to liberty. I mean, it's 2015. For the love of God, people, let's start exporting liberty around the world, because everybody, yeah, anyway, moving on. Okay. Obama called Putin. There's going to be these talks in Minsk coming up, right? I'm not sure exactly when. I think it's later this week. But for the first time in a long time, several weeks, in fact, Barack Obama actually called Vladimir Putin on the phone to talk about this crisis in the eastern Ukraine, and also to talk about this upcoming meeting in Minsk to resolve the conflict. President Obama underscored the rising toll of the human fighting and underscored the importance of President Putin seizing the opportunity presented by the ongoing discussions between Russia, France, Germany, and the Ukraine to reach a peaceful resolution, according to the White House. And just before the statement, a contact group, including representatives from Kiev, Eastern Ukraine, rebels, Russia, and the OSCE, finished their preparations for the Normandy 4 format talks set to take place today in Minsk. Pardon me, I didn't get that detail in there. Today in Minsk. And TASS news agency said that the group worked out a ceasefire plan for eastern Ukraine and ways to monitor it. A heavy weapons withdrawal scheme was also reported, and that has apparently been agreed upon as well. So following last week's substantive and constructive five-hour talks between Putin, Merkel, Holland, and a number of Western media, they reported that the ultimatum was issued to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Merkel reportedly vowed more sanctions if Russia finds new peace proposals from France and Germany to be unsatisfactory. But Russian presidential press secretary Peskov said that nobody has ever talked to Russian President Vladimir Putin in the tone of an ultimatum, and couldn't do so even if they wanted to. Again, I think Putin here is holding a lot more cards than the Western media is letting us think about. That's what I think is going on. So what's going to happen at this Minsk accord today? Hopefully, at the minimum, a ceasefire going on in the eastern side of Ukraine. Some of the videos coming out of there are absolutely heart-wrenching. And that's why you're not seeing them on the TV, ladies and gentlemen, because we're paying for it. We are absolutely paying for it. And I have a feeling we're going to be paying for it for a long time. I agree, Eric. Somebody in the chat room talking about how we would feel if our country was just divided and people just came in and started setting up homes. Ah, man, I tell you what, you guys really need to see Anna Balzer's presentation. I think it's a Jewish girl in Palestine or something like that. You can look it up on YouTube, Anna Balzer. Whew, it will change your life. Totally worth buying the DVD and supporting her if you can do it. Anyway, let's see here. The EU made a pretty bold announcement. They are upgrading their partnership with the Middle East and North Africa in terms of fighting against ISIS. And they named a number of countries that they are going to be standing behind, Algeria, Egypt, Iraq, Israel. And their aim is to strengthen political dialogue with regional coordination structures such as the League of Arab States and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and the African Union. So, again, the EU kind of stepping up, showing some support for the Middle East and the people who are under the gun of ISIS right now. And that's a pretty big deal. That's a pretty big deal. Let's see here. What else is going on? Oh, big move from Jordan. They have moved thousands of troops, apparently, to the Iraq-Jordan border, ostensibly to guard against influx of ISIS into their territory. But it does need to be pointed out that although there have been a few pockets of ISIS support across the Iraqi border and into Jordan, their deployment appeared to be a pretty significant intensification of ongoing efforts to secure the border, to stop movement of men and weapons. So they're not just concerned about ISIS coming in, but they're talking about people going to and from Jordan, carrying weapons, things like that, support to ISIS. So they're saying pretty substantially that it's not a precursor to some kind of incursion. They're not necessarily threatening Iraq with a whole bunch of troops coming into their soil, but they are there to help with the battle against ISIS, and they've been doing that significantly in the last few days. Major, major air offenses from Jordan against ISIS in Syria and Iraq. So good news if you're anti-ISIS, which I think a lot of us are. We got to go to a 3-minute break, you guys. Lots and lots of news to get to, and Doreen Hannes will be joining us here in about half an hour. Really appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat room. We'll be right back, guys. 3-minute break.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Degrees of Insanity with Donnie Gilson.
Sunday, Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Really do appreciate you guys sticking out in the chat room. Absolutely love seeing you guys there. I got to let you know, it does boot me out of the chat room every time we go to a break, so I have to log back in, and it takes me a couple seconds. So if anything's going on during the break, sometimes I miss it and I don't get it till I get back to the show. So don't think I'm ignoring you guys in there. I love the fact that you guys are in there. I hope you guys are getting good information from the show. Really hope you guys have some good questions lined up for Doreen Hannes today. We're going to be talking about all kinds of divisive topics, things that the agenda, the powers that shouldn't be, are using to divide all of us right now. So we're definitely looking forward to that. That'll happen in about a half an hour. Want to get back into the news because, again, lots of stuff going on. I got one more international story I want to cover just because, well, I think this is kind of good news. And maybe you guys think it'll be good news too. But on Friday last week, well, first of all, would have been Bob Marley's 70th birthday. So let's just all take a second and give a little bit of praise for the man that the CIA called the most dangerous black man on the planet for quite a long time, because he was a genius, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't care what you guys think about reggae music. Bob Marley was a force to be reckoned with, and really was altruistic and believed in freedom. And anyway, on the same day, Friday last week, the Jamaican Senate finally passed new marijuana law that will change the social landscape of the small Caribbean nation forever. Historic legislation that now makes the possession of 2 ounces or less of marijuana non-arrestable but ticketable, and it was passed after a five-hour debate in Parliament. It's kind of crazy because a lot of people think, you think of marijuana, you think of Jamaica, but that's the deal here, is that for a long time, it's been illegal in Jamaica. Very, very illegal. Actually more frowned upon than some other nations in the world. And so right now, that's finally over in Jamaica. You can people there can have up to 2 ounces. It's a ticketable offense. That's a fantastic issue. I think this is something that everybody needs to go to, and I don't care if you pigeonhole me or if I'm pigeonholing myself. But anyway, it's going to allow for a new scheme of licenses, permits, and other authorizations, which enable the establishment of lawful regulated industry for marijuana for medical, therapeutic, and scientific purposes. It is also set to be debated by members of the House of Representatives in the new parliament this year, which is set to start next week with the discussion of the budget. But just think about the, you know, we destabilized that country. And by we, I mean the CIA. We went in there, we screwed their whole country up massively. That's one of the things that we've, you know, done. It's kind of our modus operandi, if you will, for a long, long time. And so this, think about what this is going to do to the people there. Now they'll be able to cultivate. They'll be able to get back into industry. They'll be actually able to, you know, have wealth. This is actual real wealth again going back to the people. And anytime I see something like that, I just get very, very happy. So I'm glad to hear that. Congratulations to the people there in Jamaica, finally getting out from under the thumb of some draconian drug laws. Okay, moving into the national news right now. Again, if you guys go to redpillreports.com, check out the show section. You'll be able to see a lot of the news that I'm not going to be able to get to. There's a lot of great health stuff and a lot of great science and tech stuff. The home, farm, and garden section, a lot of people probably have been noticing that it's not filling out a whole lot. Well, it's starting to now because we're getting into spring, and I guarantee you guys, I will be giving you guys probably daily updates on my straw bale garden when I get it going. We're not far away. It seems like we are. There's a million feet of snow in Boston right now. I understand that. But you could still be thinking about Getting your tomato seeds out, getting stuff ready to go inside, get your early planting going on, get things ready to rock and roll, because we're going to be on that season here real quick. And again, so the home, farm, and garden section in the news probably start filling out a little bit more. But I always seem to ramble about national stuff and international stuff and never seem to get to it. So you guys are missing a lot of stuff if you're not checking out redpillreports.com every day. Okay. News about this whole IRS targeting scandal. We've been talking about Lois Lerner and her what must be the most magically amazing hard drive ever on the history of the planet. I've never actually heard of a situation where a hard drive on a laptop stored the entirety of the IRS database in terms of email. But apparently Lois Lerner had the magic laptop that was created in Mount Doom, one laptop to rule them all. But a lot of emails that have been not disclosed between her and some higher-ups at the IRS and also possibly going all the way to the White House. People have been, feverishly trying to get FOIA requests answered, trying to get some of these emails disclosed so we could figure out exactly who was spearheading this mission of targeting right-leaning or liberty-leaning nonprofit organizations. Obviously, there's a lot of people out there that think that everything was directed by Mr. Obama or directed by people in his administration, and essentially use the IRS like a weapon. Because if you can keep nonprofits from being able to do business and being able to go out and canvass and do the things that that they wanted to do, well, you're cutting the legs out from under the political process. So there's a lot of people who would like to see these emails between Lois Lerner and whoever the heck she's been emailing me, So a lot of FOIA requests and things like that. The Hill has been on top of that news organization, The Hill. But apparently, as of yesterday, the Obama administration is flatly refusing now to publicly release more than 500 documents relating to this IRS targeting of Tea Party groups, right? There's 20 months have gone by since this IRS scandal broke. Obviously still a lot of unanswered questions about who was running this agency's scrutiny of conservative-leaning organizations. And The Hill, again, this news organization, has sought access to these government documents that might provide a glimpse of this decision-making through a Freedom of Information Act request. And The Hill asked for all of the 2013 emails and other correspondences between the IRS and the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, known from this point forward as TIGTA. The request specifically sought emails from former IRS official Lois Lerner and Treasury officials, including Secretary Jack Lew, while the Inspector General was working on its explosive May 13th report that the IRS used inappropriate criteria to review the political activities of tax-exempt groups. And the TIGTA opted not to release any of the newly disclosed 512 documents covered by this new FOIA request, citing various exemptions in the law. On The Hill recently appealed the FOIA decision, but the TIGTA denied the appeal, and they have also declined to comment for this particular article that we're reading right meow. But in its written response to The Hill, TIGTA cited FOIA exemptions ranging from interagency communication to personal privacy. It also claimed that it cannot release relevant documents when interference with law enforcement proceedings can reasonably be expected. So yet congressional Republicans say there's no evidence of any prosecution in the work. And media outlets have indicated that the Department of Justice and the FBI have already determined that no charges will be filed. So no charges from the DOJ or the FBI into this absolutely blatant weaponization of the IRS by somebody on the old Democratic side there. Again, no charges going to be filed, and citing the fact that there's a pending investigation, the FOIA requests are not going to be honored. So, again, we're in this catch-22 situation and not going to get anywhere in terms of the IRS stuff. I'm glad at least The Hill's bringing this up. Don't make fun of me. Somebody's making fun of me for saying relevant. That's a new word. You can coin that. I'm going to use that from now on. Things are relevant. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means. Okay, people like to make fun of me, though. White House right now apparently preparing for military response if diplomacy with Russia fails. This is according to a recent editorial from the former Assistant Secretary of Treasury, Paul Craig Roberts. I happen to believe a lot of the things that he says. I won't go through this entire article right now, but essentially what he's saying is that while the American media is generally ignoring the broader implications of what's happening in the Ukraine, it's dismissing it as Europe's problem. And that's another thing that we were talking about earlier about whether or not our proximity to the EU is a good thing or a bad thing. And I think it depends on who you're talking to. If you're part of the old administration, part of the power elite, part of the business banking gang banksters, as I like to call them, then it's great to be here because we're not going to have to deal with war on our doorstep if it does erupt. But if you're Holland or you're Merkel or you're somebody else whose economies and people are suffering because of these sanctions, well, being right there under the immediate threat of some sort of invasion or, response from Russia, I don't think I'd want to be there. It's similar to me with Turkey's situation, having to support NATO while at the same time recognizing that certain members of NATO are funding ISIS and Turkey's supposed to be helping ISIS sort of, but not really helping ISIS. You know, it's, Turkey's in another one of these weird situations. Nobody wants to talk about it. And I keep trying to bring it up with people. People are like, meh, football. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a football game. That's what happened. One sportsy team, they sportsied really hard and they outsportsied the other one and they moved that sportsy thing all the way to the other side of the sportsy and then they sportsied some more. It was amazing. You should have been there. Okay. How about what is going on? Oh, Brian Williams. Yeah. Let's talk about Brian Williams for just a second. He's apparently been suspended now, from NBC for 6 months without pay. What do you guys think of that? Is that significant to anybody out there? So again, somebody lying about Iraq, now being forced out of his job for 6 months without pay. I think Brian Bozell said it best. He had some great tweets coming out yesterday. He's a regular guest on Hannity. He's also, part of the Newsbusters organization there, but he came out yesterday and he issued the following statement in reaction to NBC's decision to suspend the nightly news anchor Brian Williams without pay for 6 months. And I think he nails it on the head. He says, NBC's lead anchor is exposed as a serial liar who attempts to deceive even when he's apologizing for his lies. And he gets what for that? A suspension? 1 month? 2 months? 6 months? 6 years? Who cares? NBC has decided that news presented by a dishonest superstar is preferable to news presented honorably by anyone else if it means a drop in their ratings. But this isn't supposed to be about ratings. It's supposed to be about professionalism, ethics, and honesty. And if NBC thinks giving Mr. Williams a sabbatical resolves this issue, that network is clueless. A new descriptor is born. NBC News, whose lead anchor repeatedly has lied about the news. NBC is unbelievable, literally. Just like Brian Williams. Man, that is so good. Unbelievable. Just like Brian Williams. I'll tell you what, if you need more indication right now that the national mainstream news is not telling you the truth, I don't know how much further away from this Brian Williams issue you'd have to look to figure that out. I mean, it's about as blatant as it can possibly be at this point, ladies and gentlemen. So again, just so you guys know, nobody's paying us to do anything. We're here just giving you our opinion, doing the best we can, trying to whittle our way through this mess that we're being presented with on a daily basis. So we're not going to sensationalize anything. I've never been in Iraq. I've never been shot at by an RPG, and I've never seen a body floating by me at Katrina. Just not been there, guys. If I'm telling you, if I've been there, I'll tell you. But I'm not going to do anything like Mr. Williams has done, I'll tell you that. Republican lawmakers in Oklahoma right now are considering two separate bills that would allow the state's Department of Corrections to return to gas chambers as an alternative to lethal injection for execution, as dwindling stocks of the drugs and scandals over botched procedures fuel a search for alternatives. So Mike Christian right now, who's the Oklahoma representative who proposed the bill, he told the AP that execution by nitrogen hypoxia would be a lot more practical, painless, and would not require the presence of medical doctors. The use of lethal injection there has become pretty problematic in recent years as a stock of pentobarbital seem to be running lower. You know, a lot of people may not be following this story, but there are companies out there like in France that supply these lethal drugs to Oklahoma. And that's not actually what the drugs are marketed for. So when Oklahoma uses them, these companies overseas say, whoa, here's not what we're marketing these drugs for, and they refuse to sell them. So that's why the stock in these drugs in places like Oklahoma is starting to dwindle. There are lots of states. I think Idaho, even a few weeks ago, was thinking about going back to firing squad. I don't know if that's more humane. I'm kind of thinking decapitation. And again, you know, I'm not a huge proponent of state-sponsored murder. I do think potentially, I mean, I don't know, does it work as a deterrent? Do we feel like it works as a deterrent? Because it seems like the people who commit these crazy heinous crimes are not necessarily capable of being deterred. It, to me, it's a lot like the drunk driving laws. You're trying to deter someone who is beyond the point of being deterred because they're drunk. It doesn't make any sense. It can't work as a deterrent in that effect because this person's already lost all their inhibitions. Same thing with murder, in my opinion. If you're crazy enough, or, you know, we know for a fact with science that, that psychopaths do not feel empathy. And that's kind of the whole motive behind the cremation of care, what do you want to call it? The ceremony that goes on at the Bohemian Grove every year. This is the idea that these business elites and political elites can get rid of the portion of their brain that provides empathy, that they understand that when something happens to other people that they're supposed to feel that. Well, psychopaths, apparently, according to MRI scans and things like that, they don't have empathetic centers. They don't have this whole cause and effect relating to hurting other people and things like that. So again, are we able to actually deter those people by providing, an extreme punishment like death, you know, or whatever, or being incarcerated forever and ever? I don't know if it works as a deterrent. It seems like we should be maybe treating these people. But at the same time, I think if you, murder the quiet family next door and cook them up in a barbecue and eat their dog, well, yeah, maybe you should be locked away for, I certainly don't want you roaming my neighborhood. I'd like to know if you live next door to me. So I don't know. I think, there is a place for laws. We do need laws to protect, you know, people, minority rights, individual rights. But I don't know if the state necessarily has moral authority to be murdering people, I guess would be where I'm going with all of that. What do you guys think? I don't know. Maybe I just kind of went off on a tangent there for no reason. But anyway, Republican lawmakers looking at returning to the gas chamber. We'll see if that, carries through or not. What else? I want to talk about a couple of good stories here real quick, because people forget that the good things happen right now. But there was a guy recently, the story just came out of Phoenix. I thought this was kind of cool. Gentleman was at Goodwill, found a watch at the Phoenix Goodwill, paid $6 for it. Saw this watch, said, I think that watch might be worth more than $6, went ahead and bought it. Well, turns out he was absolutely correct. The man, his name is Zach Norris, he found an extremely valuable watch. So valuable, in fact, he ended up selling it for $35,000. He contacted a watch specialist in San Francisco named Eric Koo and confirmed with him that it was, in fact, a Jaeger-LeCoultre C-Alarm. Very, very rare, from the 1970s. Jaeger-LeCoultre is a Swiss watch. Very, very nice. Very hard to find. Not something you find at Goodwill very often. And Koo was so excited to buy this watch from Norris that Norris actually flew to San Francisco to give him the watch in person, agreed to the price of $35,000, and also Koo added into the bargain a brand new Omega Speedmaster Professional, which is one of the watches I have owned and will own again someday in the future. One of my all-time favorite watches, probably worth about $5,000. So this guy essentially went to Goodwill, find a watch for $6, and turn around and made $40,000 from it. So go to Goodwill. Check out the metal stuff in the kitchen area. Look for things that say Sterling on them. Just hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Great fun. A great way to spend a rainy day. Another cool way to spend a rainy day, and this is something I have never done, and I absolutely want to go do it. A lot of people may not know this, but there's a park in Arkansas that's an open pit diamond mine. It's 37 acres, and a gentleman there back in the early 1900s discovered diamonds on his property and decided to turn it into a state park. So he charges people a small fee where you can go and you can dig for diamonds. And I mean, lots and lots of people go and do this. It's been open since 1972, but it's the only public site in the world where you can go for and dig for diamonds and keep them. Well, a guy this week, after a really sizable rain came through, found a 2-carat diamond, yellow diamond there in Arkansas, right on the surface. Right after this rain came through, went out, reached down, found a diamond. probably worth in the neighborhood of about $20,000. But how cool is that? I'm a big fan of treasure hunting. I don't know if you guys are into like metal detecting and stuff like that, but I find myself just completely fascinated with stories about people finding hidden gold and wealth and diamonds. But I, you know, I'm so close to Arkansas. I've never driven down there, but I would love to go spend a weekend digging through the dirt and seeing if you can find something down there. There have been some pretty significant discoveries down there, just so you guys know. The largest diamond there was a 40.23 carat diamond found in 1924, before that was a state park, right? But it was still privately owned at the time. 40 carat diamond. And another guy discovered a 6.19 carat limitless diamond back in April. 6.1 carats. That's like 30 grand. Crazy. Just finding it in the dirt. And I don't know what the fee is to go and dig around in the dirt there, but man, I think it'd have to be worth it. What's it, 10, 20 bucks? That'd be a good day. Good find for the family too. Take your kids out there. They're short. They're a lot closer to the ground. They can see stuff more easily. That's the key. You got to get your kids involved. Just a tip. There you go. And a record 3,415 Americans gave up their citizenship this year. I don't know why that number is so low. Probably because the cost of giving up your citizenship has gone up like 600% this year. It used to cost you like a nickel, and now it's a couple hundred thousand million dollars or something like that. Probably that's a little extreme. But again, I think it was like $240, and I think it's well over $2,500 now to actually expatriate. My question is, who in the right mind would pay money? Once you're out of the country, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you're out of the country. You're done. You have expatriated. I left the country. I no longer live there. If the IRS sends me a letter here, wow, kudos to them, because I'm, you know, they're going to have trouble finding me. And I would, you know, if I figured like if you go on Facebook and say, hey, I no longer live in America, that qualifies as expatriation as far as I'm concerned. I don't know who this entity is that you're supposed to pay to have the privilege of saying I'm no longer part of your corporate, you know, hegemony or whatever. But apparently there's an industry. You got to pay them. Okay, let's talk a little bit about some tech news right now. There's one cool story. I really like this. Last week, I didn't get a chance to talk about it, but I don't know if you guys are following the Tesla car, electric car thing. They've got a new, their new sedan is coming out all electric, and it goes 0 to 60 in 3.2 seconds. That's pretty darn impressive for a car that makes no noise, and that's crazy technology, right? But last week, they announced that they were going to do a firmware update. And for all you tech gals out there, you know that that's just a computer change. You plug it in, you do a bio flash, and you do a firmware update. With that firmware update, they upped their 0 to 60 time from 3.2 seconds to 2.8 seconds. How crazy is that? They didn't have to do anything to the motors. They didn't have to do anything. All they did was a firmware update, 2.8, 0 to 60. But here's a cool story now. Porsche has got a new vehicle coming out called the Pajun. And the Pajun from Porsche allegedly for a long time was going to have a regular motor. It's going to be basically the small version of the Panamera Junior is basically what it is. The Panamera is the Porsche's four-door sports sedan, and it is very nice, but it's, you know, ugly because it's four-door. And they were coming up with this new design for the Pajun, which is the Panamera Junior. But initially, again, was going to be regular car, you know, regular internal combustion motor. But it turns out now that Porsche has decided that that arena of the super expensive, you know, four-door sedan, regular powered cars is just too full. It doesn't make sense for them to release another vehicle into an already crowded market. So they have now opted to go to an all-electric drivetrain. And it does look like, from some of the numbers that Porsche is projecting, that this could be a pretty significant competitor to the Tesla S. Tesla S right now is a hot, hot, hot commodity. I think there's probably about a one-year waiting time lane from putting your deposit down to when you can actually get the car. I would love to be one of the first people to own one of these all-electric sports cars. But thinking that Porsche, with the name recognition that they've got, that's a pretty significant move from them to be coming out with an all-electric vehicle, especially if it boosts speeds or boasts speeds as big as the Tesla. How big was the diamond? It was a little over 2 carats. 2.1 carat was the yellow diamond that was found just this last week there in Arkansas, Mr. Robert. Questions from the chat rooms, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, so that's what's going on there. Getting excited about Tesla. There's been a really neat invention, a 17-year-old girl who volunteered at the hospital to do her, I think they typically, have to do about 20 hours of community service in the community that she lives in. I don't know what that's about. Anyway, she ended up doing about 600 hours, really fell in love with working with people at the hospital, but she pored through dialysis machine owner's manuals, and she developed a prototype using pretty simple off-the-shelf technology. And a dialysis machine normally would cost about $30,000. This young woman has created one for about $500. And what's really cool about this is that it has potential home use. So somebody that has to go to do dialysis, people who go dialysis is the process of cleaning blood. So it cleans the waste from your blood, just for you guys who out there who don't know about it. And it's usually used by people who have kidney disease, stuff like that. And it usually takes a couple hours, 4 hours, a couple of times a week. So it's a pretty big commitment in time. You've got to go someplace, you got it hooked up, you got to sit there, you got to read a book, blah, blah, blah. So the idea that they could take that technology and integrate it into people's homes for a ridiculous cost difference, I mean, $30,000 versus $500, just absolutely amazing. And I love anybody doing things with technology that saves people money and bolsters humanity. Like the guy who replaced that $18,000 prosthetic arm the other day with a $50 3D printed one that actually worked better. I mean, that's what we need. So again, technology is an answer. It is what's going to move us forward, but it has to be used for good. It has to be used altruistically and for the right thing. This is probably not the right thing. There's been a report came out right now that says that Japanese girls, this is real, spend on average 7 hours a day on their mobile phones, and some of them spend up to 15 hours a day on their phone. Is that insane? Can you imagine spending 7 hours a day on your phone? And I've told this story before. You know, a lot of you guys know I worked for the DOD for a long time and been to Japan a few times. And this was more than 10 years ago. I mean, I was there probably, well, about 10 years ago. Yeah, 2005, 2006 time frame. They had 7G on their phones versus when I left, I think we were just getting 3G here. 7G, and you could watch these girls walking around in Japan, and which is why I don't believe that this is an exaggeration at all, the 7 hours. And they would have video conferencing going on with their friends, split screen, four different participants, four different, you know, people in FaceTime on their phone, walking down the street, having a conversation, five people all at the same time. And that's what they do over there. They spend all this time talking. I can't imagine. I don't want to talk to my friends that much. Holy cow. Can't even imagine. I mean, talk about, yeah, I get bored when people are showing their pictures of their lunch on Instagram. I don't want to know everything that you guys are doing. But apparently in Japan, that is the thing. Boys, not quite as bad. They spend about 4 hours on their phone every day. Man, think of the health implications though of just being that connected to an electronic device all the time. 15 hours a day, some of these girls on the phone. Just absolutely incredible. So I hope you guys out there are finding much better things to do with your time than to be on the phone for 15 hours a day. Probably ought to talk a little bit about what's going on in the economy right now. I'm battling a slow computer system here, so just bear with me, but we'll jump over into the investment world and see if we can figure out just at least what the market is doing. We've only got a few seconds left before we have to go to break, and Doreen Hannes will be joining us, and we'll be talking about all kinds of things divisive today. We'll talk about the polarization of what's going on. Okay, real quick, Dow is down just about 30 points, 17, 8, and 38. S&P is still above 2,000 at 2,063. Gold taking a little bit more away today, 1223 for gold, 16 and 86 big pennies. We'll get you an ounce of silver, and Bitcoin to 1799. The euro pulling away from the dollar just a touch, but we're still above 113 on that international trade there. We're going to go to a break here, guys. We'll be right back with Doreen Hannes. Thank you guys for sticking with us through the break. Thank you guys as well for being in the chat room. Love to see you guys there. Thank you for supporting the show, too. We'll be right back, guys. See you in a minute.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR. Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai Kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
No hate. No hype. No fear. We are TFR.
Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Thank all of you guys who are in the chat room as well. Love seeing you guys. If you want to be involved with the program, you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com and get into the chat room. You can listen along there as well. And if you have questions for our very special guest today, Miss Doreen Hannes, that's a great place to post them. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines in the, at the bottom of the hour too. So if you guys have call-in questions, we'll get to that as well. But, to cut to the chase here, Miss Doreen Hannes is going to be our guest. She is joining us all the way from the wonderful state of Missouri. And for those of you guys who don't know Doreen, she's been an avid student of the effects of the World Trade Organization's free trade agreements since, and on the livelihoods of the American citizens since their establishment of the WTO and ratification of NAFTA back in 95. Her predominant area of interest has been the impact on independent agriculture and the ramifications of these agreements on food freedom and the consolidation of access to markets for independent growers. Her website is truthfarmer.com, and she does a great job of keeping that site updated with all kinds of new research as she has as she's discovering things. So first and foremost, Doreen, thank you very much for joining us once again on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoy it, JD. You said, we always have good conversation.
We do. We always seem to get right into the thick of stuff, don't we? And I think why that is that because both you and I have been students of this stuff for so long, not just, I mean, your main focus obviously was independent agriculture, being self-sustaining, right. And in pursuit of that goal and in pursuit of trying to get your community in line with that goal, you started noticing that there was an overarching agenda of control that was kind of coming down, and really you saw it through the lens of independent agriculture and some of the effects of NAFTA and the World Trade Organization. But I also know that as you've been studying this stuff, as I have, that you kind of you start to take a bigger step back and you start looking at it from a more macro perspective, and you start to realize that this agenda of control is certainly not limited to our ability to independently grow food or our ability to be self-sufficient. And I think in studying it for 10 years, both of us kind of have a finely tuned BS meter. Our BS meter is just usually pretty well calibrated at this point. So any of these other issues that keep coming up and are being batted around by the mainstream media in these kind of polarizing fashions, they both really kind of raise red flags for both of us. And I think that is a testament to your intelligence and your ability to kind of look outside of the box at some of these things. And I know typically, as I said, you like to talk about agriculture, but there's a lot of other things going on right now, and you've got some other things on your mind today. Is that right?
That's right. I do have other things on my mind. And I mean, you know, agriculture for me, that is a dominant issue, because if we can't eat, we can't fight anything else.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And to me, that, you know, it isn't that that is the only issue, but it's one of those in which if you cause people to be sick, you cause people to be hungry, you cause people to have diseases, you cause people to be unable to feed themselves and their neighbors, then you have complete control of the people. Mm-hmm. You know, conversely, there are so many things going on so many levels that I swear, even if you have been studying this longer than I have, which like about 94, 95 is when I started going, ba-ding, you know.
Right.
And I, you know, I simply could not continue in the paradigm that was presented to me because, you know, reality just defied what they were trying to sell.
Right.
You know, even if you've been in the truth movement, if you will, since the 70s, at this juncture, everything is moving so rapidly, and the main objective appears to be to cause absolute division on everything that humankind engages in. And I mean, it is, we are just being divided, and thereby conquered.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
So, you know, the issues extend beyond the simple issue of being able to feed yourself or grow food or
I do want to, touch on that for just a second. I'm not sure if you listened. The other day we had pharmacist Ben Fuchs on the show, and he made a pretty big point about the fact that if you're not, nutritionally balanced, if you're not eating the right foods, it really changes your ability to make correct decisions. So, you know, in a situation that we find ourselves in right now where just about every place you look, could be a trigger for some sort of global, you know, meltdown. You got an economic global meltdown. You've got, you know, the potential of Putin blowing us all up. Right now, I think especially, would be a really good time for people to be able to make accurate decisions, especially if we're not getting good information from mainstream or really any stream at this point because things are so convoluted. It does draw your attention back to the fact that you got to be at least mentally capable of making correct choices, and growing your own food is, yeah, it's one of the aspects of that that most people ignore, Doreen.
Well, absolutely. And that's, you know, I was speaking with our youngest daughter the other day about how our freedoms had dissipated, you know, over the course of, say, her grandmother's life to mine to hers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when my mother was a child, people could go to the store and buy dynamite and shotguns and walk down the street with them.
Right.
You know, like underage people, 12, 13 years old. You know, the store owner could say, no, I'm not giving that to you. But it wasn't as though you had to have all these special licenses and things of that nature. You know, it was just, okay, you're going to go blow up some stumps. Here you go. So, you know, now, I mean, we couldn't even begin to do that. We'd have to hire experts and blah, blah, blah.
There's two. I'm sorry, but there's two parents right now in Michigan who are under threat of CPS taking away their kids because they allowed their 8-year-old and their, I think their 6-year-old to walk like a quarter mile home from school. Which when I was that age, oh my God, if I ever even saw my parents, it was like a weird thing, you know? We were out from sun up until sundown. We used to ride around in circles on our bikes while someone in the middle shot at us with what are those wrist rocket things? The slingshots. We're the most dangerous things you could ever do in your whole life. We did them all and we lived fine, you know? It's the weenification of America is so profound. And I know that there are people out there right now who are looking at this whole measles debate going, are you guys really worried about measles? Remember when we all had measles and everybody who is now, you know, essentially built natural tolerances for measles and we're all fine now? I mean, it's just crazy the weenification that's going on, Doreen.
Well, right, and that, is, again, is another issue that divides us.
Hmm?
You know, I told you this when we spoke last. I was called the stupidest person on the internet because I made a comment about forced vaccination for measles and that, you know, number one, it isn't as effective as people would like to think.
Right.
Number two, it has a great number of side effects that with all of the additional pollutants in our environment, in our food, in the other vaccines that they keep jabbing kids with, you know, they have compounding effects that we don't actually know.
That's right.
You know, we don't know the total outcome of these things. And so I'm the stupidest person on the internet.
I don't know. I'm sure that's not true because there's 2,000 people right now that have signed on there's a petition, you know, on the website, the White House petition website. There's actually more than 2,000 people who have signed on it saying that anybody who believes that they should not vaccinate their children, and that belief needs to be qualified now as a medical condition or a mental disorder. They want it included in the fictitious, you know, pharmaceutical or what is it? The psychological, you know, manual for where they tell you that because you are fidgety too much that you need to be on ADHD medication, you know, that book.
Right.
If you're anti-vax, you apparently have a mental disorder now. So,
okay, well, I'm glad. I also think unregulated thoughts on quite a regular basis. Ergo,
right.
Yes, I'm a criminal and I have a mental disorder because, you know, critical thinking, hello,
right.
You know, forget about it. But, you know, that I think the issue with all of these things, you know, you have people who are having their children taken away from them or being accosted by CPS. So one lady, and this has not been too long ago, let her 9-year-old go across the street to the playground unsupervised.
Right.
You know, I mean, and this is standard operating procedure, and people still say, well, I'm proud to be an American because I'm free. You know, and it's a horrifying thing. And I think that just pick one area, whether it's, you know, your right to parent the way that you see fit, or whether it's, you know, how to educate your child, or whether it's vaccines or no vaccines, or whether it's economic freedom, or whether it's, you know, water rights and land rights, or whatever, pick an area and start studying it and get active and educate others on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we all do it, we might be able to make a difference, you know. So at any rate, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about on the divisive side of things was the issue of police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
and the machinations in position actually to cause that to be more of an issue. You know, how you have this question since the Rodney King incident, which I was in LA during those riots.
Oh, really?
It was not fun.
Right.
It was not fun. And, you know, the first couple of hours, I think, were actually about the decision and the insanity of that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it was insane. But then the rest of it was simply mayhem, you know.
Right.
But it was very unpleasant. And I'm sure that others who were there would agree, we really don't want that kind of thing. It's very uncomfortable, you know. You're walking down the street. And we were under martial law. You couldn't be out after a certain time of night. And it was not any fun.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, you know, and then conversely, just because your skin color was white, you were also a target at that time.
Right.
And I think that right now, what we're seeing in relation to that is we have really intensified racial division and police versus normal everyday people division.
Absolutely.
And it's increasing so significantly that in rural America, a well-known, community-known, lifelong resident got tased in his vehicle, almost 70 years old, tased because he didn't follow the officer's instructions in 6 seconds.
Wow.
You know, and why are the police officers not being trained in how to actually interface with humanity?
Well, and that the answer to that question, and I mean, I'm not an expert, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm certainly not a law expert. But the answer to that question is because they want this agenda to continue. This has been a controlled experiment to divide the police from the people for it has to be decades now. So, you know, I always come back to the idea that, like what you said, you know, we're creating the conditions that allow these encounters to take place, to take root. My main concern when I hear about a 70-year-old man being tased is that I know immediately that if that gentleman had been tased and died, that there would be no accountability from that officer or the department. And if there was accountability, in terms of, you know, fiduciary accountability, it's going to come out of the hands of the taxpayer, right? So there's no direct accountability for law enforcement. So that's one major issue right now, is that these guys can essentially operate with impunity. I don't know if you saw, but the article came out maybe a month ago from the Supreme Court, basically saying, and setting the case law, that the police, as long as they make a reasonable, quote unquote, reasonable mistake in interpreting the law, that they're not going to be held accountable. And it came from a situation where a guy was pulled over in Pennsylvania because one of his taillights was out. And it turns out that in Pennsylvania, you only need to have one taillight. That's the law. But the officer didn't know that, pulled him over, searched his vehicle, found drugs. And so the whole basis of the lawsuit was that initial pullover was not valid in the first place, which is completely accurate. But the Supreme Court decided to rule on the behalf of the police department, saying, well, it was a reasonable mistake. The guy made a reasonable misunderstanding about the law and thought he was doing his job, which means essentially they can do whatever the hell they want now, and there's nothing that we can do about it. But I'll tell you what, if you reasonably misunderstand the law, you're going to go to jail. It doesn't even matter, you know, as long as ignorance of the law is not a shield from it, has always been the mantra that I've heard from law enforcement. And I think that that door should probably swing both ways, but it does not look like at this point that it's gonna, you know. So.
No, and you know, and that's the issue. It's like, I mean, my working mantra is, it isn't that I don't like cops. I just feel better when they're not around.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And I actually do have a few gentlemen who are in their police, and they're good guys. You know,
right.
And I have no problem with the idea of having police going up and down the road and checking neighborhoods. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is the code enforcement aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, generally, they are revenue collectors, and that is a dang problem. It should not be that way. There should actually be a victim if there's a crime,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, police are supposed to be peace officers, not code enforcers, and
that's
they've
right.
become code enforcers, and they've also been trained to this, you know, that statement, the thin blue line. And what we have going around now, and this has happened previously, but we have a gentleman here in Missouri, his name is Bob Powder, and he had a son, he was chief of police in West Memphis, and his son was killed. He made a traffic pullover. They were doing, what is it called? Drug abatement. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so they pulled over a car without a state plates, and the people within that vehicle, evidently touted themselves as sovereign citizens,
mm-hmm.
and they became frightened.
Mm-hmm.
And the son, who I believe was 16 years of age, shot this gentleman's son.
Yeah.
And killed him, and another officer was killed, and they were later apprehended, and they were killed in the apprehension.
Mm-hmm.
So this gentleman, Powder, he learned that they were quote-unquote sovereign citizens, and so he began to look into it and fell in with the Southern Poverty Law Center,
right.
and is going around and went to 11 different seminars within the state of Missouri and taught law enforcement and local elected officials, if they wanted to be there, that if someone refers to themselves as a constitutionalist, they are a sovereign and they want to shoot police.
Wow. That's a pretty bold statement for somebody who doesn't obviously understand their birthright in this country, you know.
Right. Right. And I mean, I feel for the man because he lost his son.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it wasn't because these people held a political ideology of sorts. And I don't even know exactly what that was. And neither does he. But this terminology thing, constitutionalist equals sovereign equals they want to kill police.
Right.
And anytime you pull someone over and they refer to themselves as a constitutionalist, or they say they're not driving, but they're traveling, you need to call in backups and make sure you have long guns present.
Wow. Well, and you know, I can understand why he would say that just from a standpoint of misunderstanding, but I think you hit the nail on the head when you're talking about this situation where the police were out doing drug abatement. Okay. Well, that's the answer right now. They're out. A, trying to stamp out their competition because there is no bigger drug dealer than the state, especially when you get into a federal level. So they're out there trying to protect their assets. That's what they're doing. They're also, at the same time, elevating the state, again, a construct of the minds of men, to a position where it's above you, like where the state has more rights than you do, which is never a situation that's ever existed in the history of the world. The creator always has hierarchy over the createe. So anytime that these people are telling you that they're going to put you in a cage for a victimless crime or a crime where the state is the victim, you know right away that all of it is about commerce and all about revenue generation, just like what you're talking about, which is why they've got quotas. We've heard so many people talk. I mean, look at the situation in New York where they had this huge slowdown in protest for the slaying of those two officers. There are there are recordings now that have come out from the high-up meetings there with the commissioner saying, we got to get these people back. We got to get writing tickets again. We got quotas. We're not making our budget. So, but that's the issue, too, also, is that most people – don't understand the difference between a peace officer and a law enforcement officer. And also people don't understand that municipal law enforcement, the people who are protecting the corporate entities that we call states and counties and things like that, that is their job. That's where they came from. Back in the day when the robber barons were running New York and running the bigger cities like Chicago, they had stores. They had things and infrastructure that they wanted to protect. That was where municipal policing came from. It's always been about protecting the interests of a financial elite. It's always been about protecting infrastructure. So when our governments, quit being governments and turned into corporate entities, they need corporate entity protection. And that's why they have corporate law enforcement. That's why you have state sworn law enforcement officers, because they are there to protect the corporation. They're not there to protect us. And that's why, a lot of people were really upset with, I know we're going to get into the Ferguson issue here because that was a great divisive moment in our country, perfectly played out by the agenda that we're talking about. But people were really upset because, quote unquote, the National Guard didn't step in to protect the people's homes there. And I had to stop on Facebook so many times and explain to people the National Guard is an organization called the National Guard, guys. That's what they're called. That's what their job is. Their job is to protect national infrastructure. That's why they were surrounding the Capitol buildings. That's what their job is. The continuity of government doesn't have anything to do with the continuity of your well-being. It has to do with the perpetuation of government in and of itself, which is why all of these institutions, the education institution, the religious institutions, the government institutions, the banking institutions, all of them are starting to crumble because all of them only exist to self-perpetuate. That's it. But we can't sit here and say, well, these police are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, because they're doing exactly what their mandate is. And until you understand their mandate, you can't find the remedy. So we got to put it in the right terms, that most of these law enforcement officers, specifically the municipal ones, and we're not talking about constitutional peace officers, and we're not talking about, elected sheriffs and things like that, that we're talking about the guys hired by the city. Those guys are corporate interests. They are corporate agents. That's what they do. They operate under color of law, and therein lies all the remedy to all of this, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But making sure people understand that historically they are doing exactly what it is they're supposed to do, gives people the ability then to react to it, because they're not going to be surprised by saying, why is this cop, you know, telling me that he's going to put me in a cage because I ran a stop sign? Well, it's because he works for the state and that's what his job is. And he's going to do his job until he stops getting paid for it. So, you know what I mean?
Well, then maybe therein lies the rub. But, you know, the issue is that we effectively, we have all of these legalities, and then we have extra legal people. You know, the way that I look at it, and, you know, I'm not looking at it from a clinical law application. I'm looking at it as humanity.
Right.
You know, we have people that we pay to basically enable us to move about without being attacked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when these people who we pay to, you know, protect our ability to move from A to B without impediment begin to attack us, and then they don't have accountability for doing so, when they get, instead of having an additional onus for their behavior, like being held to a higher standard than, say, the average person, mm-hmm. there's where we have the problem. And I do understand that, you know, you have the agent of the state, and you're in a court that's run by the state with attorneys that are sworn to the state. And so what you have effectively is a racket.
Absolutely.
But unless we can make these people who have a badge and hold themselves up as being capable of quote-unquote enforcing the law, make them accountable for their actions, then we will indeed have absolute chaos, J.D.
Right, which is essentially the situation we're in right now, you know.
Yeah, we're on the precipice of it. And the manipulation, no, I mean, we're on the precipice of it because, you know, right now, the majority of people are, you know, still going about their business and not being harassed on a regular basis, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, I think, you know, I know people personally who have been beaten by police.
Yep.
Now, I think almost everybody has a friend or something that has been beaten up by police.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, were those officers ever held accountable for their actions? For instance, in this case, I'm going to reflex to this, and I'd like for your listeners to have the opportunity to go and read what I was told by this gentleman. He's 68 or 69 in Sparta, Missouri. His name is Bob Estep, and I wrote his account that he relayed to me of what occurred on PRC, Papa Romeo Charlie, news.org.
Okay, Doreen,
and they can go,
we've only
go
got ahead. About a minute left. Is this out at truthfarmer.com?
You can get it there, too, at truthfarmer.com. There's just a lot of conversation on PRC News.
PRC News is the other one?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and it's prcnews.com. I want to make sure people get that.
.org.
Okay. PRC.org. Yeah. PRCnews.org. I'm sorry. We'll get this correct here.
That's
before
it.
We go. I just don't want you to get, I don't want you to get launched on a tirade and then have us have to go to break in 30 seconds because I want to hear about this story with Bob. And I know it's a little bit longer than 30 seconds is going to allow for us. So, I do want to encourage everybody to go to truthfarmer.com. Again, Doreen, if you can support her and her efforts, definitely encourage you guys to do that. And again, PRCnews.org is where she is keeping up to date with some of the research and some of the ancillary issues that are going on as well. So I want to encourage people to go there. As I said, Doreen, we're just getting ready to go to a break, but I'm very thankful for you being here. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines for when we get back as well. So if you guys have a question or a comment, 866-37-TRUTH or 866-378-7884 will get you onto the phone board. And also, if you want to post your questions in the chat room at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can do that there. We got to go to this 3-minute break. We'll be right back with our final segment. Very special guest, Ms. Doreen Honus. Keep it right here, guys. We'll be right back.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really? I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again.
It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals.
Wow. Why are you so nice to me?
Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at HipUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com. For emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
This is London calling on Longwave.
The Chris Everard Show. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Thank all of you guys who are in the chat room as well at truthfrequencyradio.com. Love having the feedback in there. Love seeing listeners engaging in conversation amongst themselves. Just cool. Think of all the communities that we're bringing together with the beauty of technology right now, ladies and gentlemen. Just absolutely amazing. Want to return to our very special guest, Ms. Doreen Hannes. You can find her at truthfarmer.com and also prcnews.org. And before the break, we were kind of just getting ready to talk about another of these potential police brutality situations going on here in Missouri and some of the divisiveness of that agenda. Doreen, do you want to pick up that story with Bob Ustip that you were just starting?
I sure will. this gentleman, Bob Ustip, he is absolutely a salt-of-the-earth kind of guy. He's an older rancher, lived in Christian County his whole life, farmed there. He owns a great deal of acreage. Predominantly he runs cattle. And he's been very active within Christian County and particularly within his community on trying to stop Agenda 21 mm-hmm. and on being aware of freedom issues within that area.
AKA he's made himself a target is what you're saying.
Well, it kind of looks like that. That's how I would read it. Now, the town that he's close to, Sparta, it's a small town, like less than 2,000 people.
Okay.
And everybody knows everybody there. Now, he had come to a property rights meeting here in Mountain Grove and then was taking a friend of him, of his home, and then driving on to home himself. And he got to the last stoplight in Sparta, and a car pulled out behind him with its brights on. And it was about 9:30 at night. And then he told me that the car followed him, and he was trying to, you know, mess with his rearview mirror so that the car wasn't blinding him.
Right.
And so then the emergency lights came on, and he pulled over, and evidently he said, what he told me was that he sat in the car for quite a while, what seemed like a really long time to him, so he called 911.
Mm-hmm.
And then while he was on the phone with 911, the door ripped open and the cop tased him.
Wow.
And he was in a lower car, like a Saturn kind of car or something like that.
Okay.
And it had bucket seats, and when he was tased, his legs straightened out, and he kind of threw himself into the back seat between the, you know, over the console.
Right.
And then the officer opened the rear door and said, get out now, or I'm going to tase you again, and pulled him out onto the pavement. And I have photos of this, like road rash on
right.
the side of his face. And then he told me that the officer proceeded to tell him to roll over, and he was incapacitated by this taser, and his cell phone had fallen into the car again. And he couldn't comply with the officer's instructions because his feet were stuck underneath the car, and then the officer stomped on his back four times, like you're breaking wood with your foot kind of stomping on his back. And then he cuffed him and took him in for, they thought he was drunk. He blew his euro, because he'd only had lemonade to drink that night. So resisting arrest, failure to comply with the lawful commands of an officer, speeding 57 in a 55, and failure to maintain a lane. And then they tossed him out the door about 1 o'clock in the morning. And for some reason, they had taken his boots. He didn't have a coat, and his car had been impounded. So he was released onto the street at 1 a.m., 20-something, 22, 23-degree weather with no coat and no shoes. And this is a 70-year-old man who'd had heart problems in the past. He'd had a heart attack previously, and a 23-year-old officer tased him. Now, we only have that side of the story. And that's part of the problem. Now, the police department there in Sparta and the mayor are saying that they support the officer's actions and that we're not getting the full story. I am unable to get the 911 recording, and there was one made. What I have been able to do is get somebody sent me the dispatch records, and the timeline doesn't line up exactly with what Bob told me. But I have known this man since 2006, and I will state irrevocably that he is not aggressive, would never be a threat to somebody. They might not like him, but he's not a threatening individual, and he is not someone that would curse somebody out or, you know, or anything like that. I cannot conceive of him behaving in a way that would require an officer to use a taser on him. I can't even begin to conceive of it. Okay? So now that brought me to looking into the use of tasers by police. And they call it non-lethal force.
Right.
Yet, you know, 50,000 volts is non-lethal. However, since like 2009, it's killed 283 people
right.
in our country.
Mm-hmm.
That's not non-lethal. And the age group on this is quite interesting, JD. For the people who have been killed, I would say the median age is about 40.
Really? I would have thought it would have been older people, you know, more susceptible to being hurt really bad with a taser.
Well, right. A 95-year-old man was killed by police with a taser in Chicago.
Right.
For, you know, he was a nursing home resident, and he didn't want to comply with the instructions to take medication, evidently,
right.
And so they tased him to death. An 87-year-old lady was killed, and then this site that I went to was really excellent, and I'm sorry, but I don't have it here. I just wrote down some numbers here. The age group was from 15 years of age up to 95, and surprisingly, it does appear that the median age is like 35 to 40 for people being killed.
Wow.
And there are not, at least I could not find them, there are not necessarily protocols in position within every police department or within every county that require any kind of examination on using a taser.
Right.
There aren't necessarily records kept on that.
They don't keep records if they shoot somebody. I'm serious.
Right.
When I was talking to Dale Brown, who is the Detroit Threat Management, the guy who runs the Detroit Threat Management Center, and he said that of 18,000, there's 18,000 law enforcement agencies, you know, municipal police departments and things like that in our country, 18,000. And then he asked me how many I thought at the end of every year sent all their statistics to the FBI. And the number was 784 out of 18,000. 784 actually turn in records, and nobody goes over the records. You know, the FBI just takes them and files them into the whatever file that goes into, and nobody ever talks about it again. So there's the idea that they would report tasing, you know, is we're so far away from that. We can't even get them to report killings right now. And tasing, I don't know what we would have to do to get that initiative passed, you know.
Well, you know, I think it would probably have to be on either a municipality level or a state by state level to attempt to, you know, there has to be some accountability. I mean, if you can just tase elderly people without ever having to make any kind of a report about it, then what the heck? I mean, they can just do whatever they want, and that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do whatever I want. Heck, I can't even make a living in my chosen field without jumping through 9 million bureaucratic hoops, and then
right. They
can take it all away if I don't have my paperwork
in
order.
I completely agree with you that this is part of the problem, the idea that there's no accountability. We've talked about it a lot on this show, and one of the first things we need to do, obviously, is a national police offender registry. I think just like sex offender registry, we use stigma and we use shame to make these people accountable, and then we put them on a list if they do something stupid. But I also think that a portion of this discussion that we haven't had, stemming from the Ferguson thing, and I told you this story yesterday. I want to tell it again though, because of the how surprised I was with the reaction. Because to me, this shows exactly what the focus needs to be. And where it actually is, and they are completely divergent at this point. The conversation that we need to be having is why, what are the conditions that are going on right now that allow for violence in our community? Why is it that there is violence in our community, either at, you know, from thug kids shooting cops or from cops tasing people? Either way, those activities are violent, and nobody is really focusing on the root cause of that violence, or the recognizing that we have a national responsibility to have a conversation about what we want from law enforcement now. If this is not what we want, we need to open up the conversation and make it about, you know, coming up with what it is that we want. And here's an example of why I think we're so off base right now, and this division has worked. We talked about Ferguson a little while ago, but a lot of listeners know I grew up in St. Louis, and I have a lot of friends who live there, so my Facebook page is full of people from St. Louis. And a couple of months after the Ferguson thing happened with Michael Brown, there was another shooting at a mobile gas station, and there's been a couple of videos that have been released. They're not completely definitive. I'll just say that. I don't necessarily buy the official account of what happened, but it was two young African-American men. They were approached by a couple of police officers, and then the police officers essentially scatter as one of the kids apparently reaches for his waistband and allegedly pulls out a gun. The police officer shot the kid, and they've shown, you know, a few different security cam videos. Well, as soon as that incident happened, my friends who live in St. Louis, who live in a community that has seen violence and has still got violence erupting around them, All of them. All of them just said, well, he was a thug and he deserved to die, so he's dead. Good deal. And I thought, you know, wait, hang on a second. You guys are, you know, approaching your mid-30s now and coming into the 40s. You've got kids in the community. Wouldn't it be an appropriate opportunity right now to step back and say, what happened there? Why is there violence? And so I presented to them the converse of the situation. I said, what if the kid had been successful? What if he did actually have a gun and pull it out and shoot that cop? Wouldn't we be asking the question, where's the cop's body camera that he was issued that he's not wearing? Where is the footage from the dash cam that we haven't been issued yet? You know, why were the police officers talking to the kids in the first place? What were they doing? And nobody wants to ask any of those questions. And that to me is the problem. People are so focused and that nobody wants to call themselves a racist, but you know what? We're all racist people. That's the bottom line, is that we all judge people based on fight or flight. And part of that is assessing your surroundings all the time. And we look at things that we've been presented with this thug gangster mentality, and we have all been impregnated with that. We've been associating that for 20 years now because the industry of music has been promoting the thug lifestyle through gangster rap and all that. So anyway, we are racist, and my friends could not have been more racist when they said he was just a thug and he deserved to die. Nobody wants to take a macro step back and say, why is there violence in our community? And is this what we want from law enforcement? They just want to say, well, that kid died. He was a thug. Whatever. It's no big deal. So I think we're missing a big facet of the conversation, I think, Doreen. You know, we're not looking at it through the right scope on a national level. And I think that's the agenda.
I would agree, JD. You know, we're not looking at what it is police should actually be doing
right
within the community. We have all of these extra legal issues like the drug abatement thing that I spoke about earlier.
Right.
And we do not have the sense of community that we need to actually hold police accountable for their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And we've engendered basically this paradigm in which if you're not just like me, then you're automatically suspect.
Right.
You know? And I mean, and it's on all sides. And I would also state that, unfortunately, like, the entire Ferguson thing was terrible, and I don't like that at all. But it looked to me like what was happening there was really just that one segment of society is seeing the police segment as simply being a rival gang.
Right.
And,
well,
you know,
you could make that argument, I think, you know.
Well, and I honestly think that is how it is. You know, we just have and I'm not making a blanket statement about all police officers, because there are good cops out there,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
But, you know, unfortunately, police are too often engaged in drug dealing, engaged in, you know, they seize property and then they sell it or they keep it for themselves. You know, that happens entirely too frequently. And the personal accountability and the personal integrity of police officers needs to be held to a higher standard than that of the average man on the street.
Yeah.
I don't think that there is anything wrong with that kind of thinking. And I do believe that they have the right to protect themselves. And I do not want to take that away from them. I think we all have that right. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when they're just doing these drug abatements, or, you know, what about the no-knock raids on the wrong dang houses and they go in and shoot everybody?
Oh, just don't even get me, or the dogs. Don't even get me started on the shooting of dogs, ladies and gentlemen. Oh my God.
Yeah, they do it all the time.
All the time.
It's you know, I don't know if anyone has put together the statistics of how many times they shoot Rover, but it's regular activity.
Mm-hmm.
And where is the accountability? That is the issue. Where is the accountability? And I don't mean the police conducting an investigation of themselves and finding themselves to be innocent of any wrongdoing. You know, perhaps what we need is like community police review boards that are not people who are engaged in law enforcement.
Yeah.
And a rotating cast of characters on that, so that any incident that involves the deployment of a taser or excessive force where people have contusions, that type of thing, mm-hmm. needs to be reviewed. I mean, we have to have accountability or we have chaos.
Yeah. Oh, I think you're absolutely right. You know, I've been trying to mount an initiative to remove all law enforcement from our communities and replace them with well-supervised voluntary peace officers. Because if you think about it, I saw a great picture on YouTube the other day, and it was talking about just this exact issue. And it says, you know, ambulance drivers, EMTs, they sit mm-hmm. in a parking lot until they're called, right? The fire people, the firemen, the fire response team, they sit at the station until they're called. Would it be too much to ask the cops to do that too? Just don't be out on the street, you know, using revenue generation tactics and quotas and things like that to fleece fake money out of people. How about you guys just respond to actual crime and actual emergencies? I bet that alone, just that one mental shift would probably clear a lot of this stuff up.
It probably would. I think that would be a good idea if we had, you know, community police forces as opposed to what we have, which is, you know, unfortunately, the dynamic of recruiting police officers has devolved into one where it is militaristic, you know, and armies are supposed to break things and kill people.
That's right.
Not guard the peace, you know, and we do need the peace to be guarded. And I disagree with a lot of people on, driving while intoxicated, you know.
Right.
I don't think that is okay. I think that is a problem, but you know, it isn't about whether or not someone is impaired while they're driving any longer. It's purely about the revenue generation.
Right.
And
I gotta give some kudos to technology here right now, and this is another situation where we've decided to legislate morality. We're trying to legislate behavior when we could solve the problem with technology. We could put a thing in the car that if it pendulumed too far, your car would shut down, or make everybody blow in a tube, or let's just get Google on board and make all the cars drive themselves and forget about it. You know what I mean? Seriously, let's solve the problem. Let's not create more problems for people by trying to, again, legislate morality. I talked about this earlier when we were talking about the death penalty. You're talking about, you know, drunk driving laws that are set up to try and, you know, make people not want to go drunk drive, but you're trying to dissuade people who are already inebriated. And how is that you're not going to be able to deter people who are non-deterrable because their inebriation is let their, you know, so I don't know. It doesn't really work like a deterrent the way we would hope it would. I don't know. But I agree with you that it's dangerous, but I think we could solve the problem rather than trying to legislate people's behavior, because that just typically hasn't worked out well.
Well, right. And then it engenders things like these DUI checkpoints, which are patently unconstitutional.
Yes.
And they probably generate more revenue for paperwork violations, i.e., you know, oh, your car's inspection is expired.
Right.
So you owe us $150 or whatever it is, you know. And I mean, this is the issue, I guess, for me with the whole thing with our country is we have devolved to the point where if you are not good at paperwork, you can be considered a criminal. And
that is,
you know, it's antithetical to logic and reason. So, you know, if you have harmed anybody, and I mean literally, not like the state, which claims that they're harmed by you not having a license for something. Okay,
right.
That doesn't harm anybody. I'm talking clinical harm. You can't have a crime without an actual victim.
I agree.
So, you know, I mean, I think if we can bring some of these issues into public dialogue with our local officials, you know, go and sit down at the city board meeting and ask them, do you have any policy in position to review the police department's activities, they deploy a taser, or if they, you know, I mean, ask questions.
Yeah,
I
go.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Go to the CSPOA and download the CSPOA document and make these people sign it. Go into your sheriff, your local sheriff, and introduce yourself. Say, hey, I'm interested in figuring out if you're a constitutional sheriff or not, because if you're not, I know who I'm going to be voting for in the next election. You know, you get yourself in these people's faces. One of the things I like to do, I like to go up preemptively when I see a law enforcement officer on the streets, and I just ask them for a business card, because a lot of people don't know that they're actually required to have business cards. If they're in uniform, that's part of their, they have to ID themselves as being an agent of the corporation. And, they, you know, it's, I like to tell them, I want to know the names of all my employees, and that they usually don't like that, but they will always give you a business card. And, you know, the other side of that is, what kind of cop wouldn't want to be able to leave a business card if he'd had a good interaction? So any cop that's not carrying business cards out there that have their name and badge number on them, they're automatically suspect, in my opinion. And I like to put them on the spot, because they're not used to being put on the spot. They're used to putting other people on the spot. Doreen, I got to jump to a phone line here real quick, because I did say I would open the line. So if you don't mind, I want to do this really quick. Hello, caller from Pueblo, Colorado. You are on the air live, Red Pill Reports, with Doreen Hannes. Go ahead with your comment or question, please.
Hi, I'm Obie, and I just wanted to tell her briefly, our sheriff's department here, I had a medical alert system that went off by mistake, and, you know, I told them that there was no medical emergency because the cops show up first here, you know, there was the sheriff's department, and he proceeded to throw me into my kitchen counter, then throw me on the floor.
What?
And within 10 minutes, I had 8 cops in my house searching the house. They assaulted me. I have spinal cord damage, and I have, you know, I'm disabled.
Right.
And just because my medical alert, you know, they show up, they're supposed to help me, and instead they show up and assault me. I have bruises all over me. And, you know, the cops are searching the house, and, you know, you're not required to show a cop a photo ID every time you encounter them.
That's correct.
And they wouldn't leave the house. They would not leave the house until I showed them a photo ID. I informed them several times that all 8 of them were trespassing.
Right.
They still wouldn't leave the house until I finally showed them a photo ID. And then the lieutenant that showed up, because I wouldn't show an ID, they called the supervisor. The lieutenant showed up and said, "We can come into your house anytime we want. We don't need a reason and we don't need a warrant."
Wow.
Fourth Amendment, who needs that pesky thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. JD, when we spoke last time, you were telling me about a bond.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick. Obie, thank you for the call. I'm going to go ahead and mute you, man, but I really appreciate the phone call. And, yeah, we talked about this a little yesterday. I'll give this out to the listeners. This is something that a lot of people don't understand, and it stems from a lot of the conversations we've had about the way the fiat money works, the way that they fund our fiat currency through your time, talent, and energy, the idea that you are a corporate entity. So here's where all that stems from and where it all goes to in relation to law enforcement. All of these law enforcement officers, as well as the judges and the state agents who work in the courtrooms, these guys are agents of corporations. That's what they are. They are acting under the color of law. And as such, they have to be insured. They have to have bonds. Okay. In Missouri, every law enforcement officer that works for a state or a municipality has an insurance policy on them, because if they go crazy in their car, they run you over or take their gun out and start shooting out your windows, somebody has to be accountable for that. So they are actually insured. You can go to your county and you can get a list of these bond numbers. You can put a commercial lien against their bonds. So if there is a law enforcement officer out there who is working for a municipality, like a state or a city, they are, I absolutely 1,000% guarantee you, they are insured. And if you go and put a commercial lien against their bond, their very next phone call will be from their union rep, who says, "I'm sorry, but your position is no longer valid because you are not insurable because you violated your oath, or you intimidated somebody, or you did something, and somebody out there who is an agent of their own corporation put a lien against your bond." That's the remedy. That's what people don't know and what people don't ever want to talk about. But that is how you get out of this mess. If somebody violates their oath, intimidates you, hurts you, they have a bond. Go put a lien against it and get them out of their position. That's my opinion. I'm not a lawyer, but I believe that is the best remedy that I have heard of. Doreen, what do you think of that?
I think that particularly in this gentleman's case, his story, that would be a very effective action for him to take. And it could be prophylactic in regard to a criminal, you know, complaint as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would say that if that is what actually happened to this gentleman, that he needs to have recompense. And these people need to be held accountable for their behavior. As it is irresponsible and it's criminal for me to stand by and watch somebody be beaten up without trying to stop it.
That's right. There's Samaritan laws. So where are all these good cops that I keep hearing about? Oh, my gosh. Doreen, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you very much, JD. You have a great day.
You do the same. Tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Brooks Agnew will be joining us. We'll be talking all about electric vehicles. It's going to be very, very cool. But please go check out Doreen's site, truthfarmer.com.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.